This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed a dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
It's Friday.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Especially with everything going on this weekend, it's going to be a great Friday weekend heading right into it. And, you know, that's the best thing about it is because you got Razorback baseball this weekend against Kentucky. You got the Kentucky Derby. I guess the state of Kentucky is really going to be where the excitement's at.
Yeah, I mean, that's the epicenter of our weekend. Baseball series, Kentucky Derby. So, yeah.
Yeah, and here's the unfortunate thing about it, though, is that apparently
Calipari cheating and recruiting. It's all going on this weekend in Kentucky.
Well, that's just another day at the office for Calipari cheating. I mean, that's just another weekend. So, but, you know, the weather's supposed to be kind of dicey in the state of Kentucky this weekend. And guess when what day it's going to be the worst? Saturday. What's going on? The Kentucky Derby.
Maybe it'll be early in the day.
Well, I'm hoping so, because I watched the Kentucky Derby, and again, I have no idea about who's doing what. I just like to watch it because it is an event. But when it's raining, and I think it was, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, where it was just pouring down rain.
Yeah.
Kind of just, I'm not saying it takes away all the luster, but it's kind of like, this kind of sucks.
But an off track can produce some pretty big tickets. So, you know.
And see, that's why I have you here, because I don't know that. I don't know what the track, well, I mean, what conditions,
all,
what they do.
I guess you got a field of, what, 19 now, because Omaha Beach, I don't guess they feel, I don't pay as close of attention as you give me credit, but I got friends that do. And we're going to have Pick Suey in the 8 o'clock hour to not just talk the final weekend at Oaklawn, but also the Kentucky Oaks today, so it's Ladies' Day at Oaklawn. And then, of course, the Derby is the centerpiece of the racing calendar. That is tomorrow afternoon, about, what, 5:40, I think, is post time on that, somewhere in that neighborhood. So it'll be a great day. But, yeah, not only do you have a super large field that you got to navigate through, so it's about post positions, about getting out early, it's not getting boxed in, all these things. But then if you have an off track and it's money, anything can happen. So the exacta and the trifecta tickets and the superfecta tickets can be huge.
I know that you like to bet on it. Have you ever won big with the Kentucky Derby?
No, we usually have a pool, and I need to talk with our buddy Scott, because normally what we'll do is we'll come up with this big superfecta bet. And one year we thought we had it. Hey, this is aces. We cannot lose on this deal here. Because we had the right horses keyed, and anyway, in the end, like, it only left like three horses in the field out. Well, guess who finished fourth? Well, one of those three horses. Some situation like that. Like, there were like far more possibilities on how we could win in this 10-cent superfecta versus how we could lose. It was only a handful of scenarios. We just can't have one of these three or four horses get on the ticket. Well,
sure enough.
And it was only like 40 or 50 bucks each. But I think that ticket in particular paid like, 40 or 50 grand. You know, we had to split however many ways. It had been a nice Saturday night.
So you were in a bad mood after that.
Well, it is what it is. You know, that's why they call it gambling.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the famous last words of every famous person has always been, "We can't lose." It's a can't lose situation.
Or, "I didn't see that coming."
Yes, that too. That too. So, but I know that we're going to be talking a good bit about the Kentucky Derby. And
I need to find out.
Well,
we're going to have a big superfecta consortium. You know, we normally throw 20 or 30 bucks in a piece, and I'll let somebody much smarter than me about this figure it out. And, you know, it's fun, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd have to win once to probably get even for the 15 years I've thrown in 30 or 40 bucks. We ain't won anything. We won squat.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the biggest betting man, but I always
think
just
we won
do
one dime or something.
Well, I just do long shots because I feel like those are the most fun and the biggest payouts, even though, you know, there's a reason why they're the long shots.
I just do shots.
Yeah, there you go. Probably more effective that way. But I see you have
you don't remember your losing tickets.
Well, see, this is the thing. This is the closest I've ever seen Tommy Kraft to dressing like me, because Tommy's got orange cream shorts on with a blue polo shirt. You're very colorful. You look like you're a member of the Florida Gator football staff. Yeah, but, I mean, that's...
Hey, they were on sale.
All right.
Well, you know, I was in Kansas City last weekend, and I can't, I don't know, I have this, I kind of understand why my wife has the shopping patterns and the habits she does. I'm almost as bad in the standpoint that if I see an Under Armour or a Columbia outlet store, well, I got to stop.
You know? So those are your two like big,
yeah, I like,
big places.
You know,
all right.
So I was in Kansas City last weekend, and then an Uncle Clarence rack, you know.
Nice.
You know.
My,
So I had to buy these shorts.
My clothing places that I like to go to don't have outlet stores.
Yeah. Ahoy, Poloy.
Yeah, I know. No big deal.
Ahoy.
Anything like that.
Poloy.
That's why you always go to those resale shops and try to get it.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. But no, I saw you wearing colorful shorts and,
yeah,
you know.
Well, it's Friday.
And Ty, because Ty doesn't usually wear color. I don't think I've ever seen Ty wear colorful shorts. He wears shorts.
Colorful tops, not shorts. I'm yeah. a colorful shorts guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, maybe
Ty's 24 going on about 84 with his dress sometimes.
Yeah. Some days he will look like he's dressed like a grandpa. And then other days he will look like, you know, he's dressed like a, you know, 20-year-old kid. So he's got a very wide end of spectrums mm-hmm. there that he's going along with. But, the one person that's really consistent with their clothing is honestly Tommy, because this right here is going outside the box for Tommy yeah. wearing orange shorts.
In a bright blue shirt.
Yeah.
So I really picked the wrong color today, and I didn't think about this till just now. I'm wearing Kentucky blue.
Well,
that's not good.
Well, what am I doing? I'm over here wearing blue and white stripes.
It's a blue and white stripes.
That's their colors. I mean, it's Kentucky. What are you looking at?
Yeah.
Trying to see the fish?
Yeah.
Okay. Southern Tide.
I honestly, I thought you had your shirt on inside out, actually.
That has happened to me before wearing this shirt. I will fully admit.
I don't know if it's the stripes or my vision. It's a little fuzzy this morning.
Yeah, no, it's happened to me before.
You got the shirt on inside out?
Yeah, well, it is early in the mornings. And, you know, sometimes when you're going on an all-night bender from the previous night and you wake up.
Thursday is the first official day of the week.
That's right. Especially with Cinco de Drinco coming up this week.
Got that this weekend, too.
Yeah, I know. So
you make some room for some Coronas and some tacos.
I was about to say, how do you celebrate Cinco de Drinco?
I'm going to this
year.
Okay,
all right. Well, because, I feel like if you don't have Mexican food, at least chips and salsa and some stuff, and then, if you Coronas, or you can go all in and do a Corona-rita, you know, kill two birds with one stone, then you're not really celebrating a great holiday. So you got to
go
sure.
all the way. Just get that bottle of Patron out, you know.
Oh, man.
Just go shots.
Sounds like we need to go to Tommy's house. This is celebrating this way. Good grief.
Go to Joe's.
Go to Joe's.
Yeah.
Do both.
Yeah. Just
Sunday's supposed to be nice, though, isn't it, weather-wise here?
Yes,
weather-wise. Nice weekend here.
Yeah, weather-wise is going to be great. Saturday's a little dicey, but yeah.
I think I have to bring the TV out by the pool, watch Arkansas and Kentucky. Was that 1:30 on Sunday?
That's right.
Yeah.
Is your pool ready yet?
Oh, been ready.
It
for a month and a half.
Yeah. The apartment one's not, so I'll see you at your house on Sunday.
All right, that'll be all right.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Make some fajitas.
Well, Tommy's had a pool for a while, but all last year, I never got an invite to Tommy's pool. Mm-hmm. Not once.
That's why you invite yourself, and you take care of that.
I'm sure that'll get me along very well.
He just said, come over on Sunday, and I invited myself.
Hey, that's fine.
That's pretty easy.
Hey, come on.
Yeah. Because, you know.
Tell me what time you'll be there.
Do I have to worry about any of the construction still going on with your chimney or your deck?
Oh, that part's done. We're in like phase 8 right now. Yeah. There's still some work to be completed, absolutely.
It does crack me up that literally, I think this time last year, close to it, we were talking about Tommy's deck being built.
my marriage survives this. We're in for the long haul.
I tell
you
what, it's going to look really nice when it gets done.
I keep saying that.
It's going to be beautiful.
I keep saying that.
It's going to be beautiful when it gets done, and you're going to say, man, that was worth all the time and work and effort and money. You're going
to
say
that. You need to come over because I was busting it last night. I bet I spent an hour and a half getting my wife calls them squigglies, but they're oak tassels, you know, those little. And basically, they're just pollen bombs is what they are.
Oh.
These little things that come off the trees.
Yeah.
That are, you know, a couple inches long, and they come off the oak trees. And they're oak tassels. They are not fun when they get in your pool. You got to net them all out, and you hope your vacuum gets them cleaned up. So I was out there like 2 hours getting oak tassels cleaned up last night.
All right. Well,
so it's all ready to go for you. Yeah, come over and spill beer and pee in the pool. Sure. Why not?
Let me just checkmark this to another very old man comment by Tommy. You know, those oak tree tassels.
Yeah. Score one for me.
Yeah, when they fall into the pool. and have to get them out.
Old man comment.
My goodness. And they're just pollen bombs. I mean, yeah,
pollen bombs.
Like, that's anything I've had to worry about in my life.
Pollen bomb.
Can't wait to when I become an adult to be able to
I can hear
that.
Ty going to the bar this week. I need a pollen bomb.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a drink that I'd want to try, though, if it's called a pollen bomb.
No.
But,
everybody's allergies are messed up right now.
It's a pollen bomb.
It's all these oak tassels.
The oak tassels and the pollen
bomb. Tassels. Dadgum oak tassels.
See, every time in the opening segment, I learn something new here on the Morning Rush. Kudos to Tommy for teaching me grown-up adult old man things that I can look forward to. So, but we're going to discuss a lot of things today. We're going to get into some Razorback baseball. We're also getting into some SEC talk because I think there's some big news coming out from the SEC, or at least an interesting conversation that we can have about it. Yeah. And we'll also get, of course, into your phone calls, 877-377-6963.
And you boys, particularly Ty, is going to be really happy with me later in the show. Because
someone's getting a raise?
Did you order food?
Better than that. Food. You got it.
I go for the raise. Ty goes for the food.
Ty doesn't care
if that's
about
not
that.
The most, like, Ty thing ever.
Our buddy Dwayne from Hardee's. Hardee's is rolling out their roast beef sandwiches again. He wanted to know if it would... Would it be okay if I brought some by for the crew in the morning?
Well, gee, let me check. Yeah, it's fine.
I said, let me call and ask Ty. Yeah. Oh, never mind. Just go ahead and come on.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine.
I got you. He said, well, how many do you think? I said, well, Ty's there, so probably a couple dozen.
Decent amount. My head's been like, I need some food because I'm like blinking this morning.
You got about 2 hours. Yeah. You got about 2.5 hours, and you can have all the roast beef sandwiches from Hardee's you want.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And then he's, guess what? Well, we got to work this out when he's here. He wants to come back and feed you again on your show at noon. So,
I'll
so you may
sacrifice
get the double dip, or you can schedule that for next
week.
No,
we can double dip if we need to.
He'll find a way. He'll find a way to power through when it comes to
food. It'd be like Ty at a golf tournament. He'd be shoving roast beef sandwiches in his golf bag like he does beers.
Yeah, jeez. You know? Yeah.
He leaves with more than he came with.
Golly.
That's the objective.
Golly. That's a story for another day. That was just terrible.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
You know, Danny in Russellville called in the previous segment, was talking about how Arkansas just used to have a plethora of great kickers. I mean, of course, Steve Little is one of the first names that pop up. And even as of recent, I guess you would say the best kicker would be Zach Hawker.
Absolutely.
I mean, the guy was money. Either whether it was kickoff or from field goal range, he was always, you could always count on him. And it's amazing that when you look at a lot of the games that Arkansas has lost over the past few years, and we know the stat that always gets thrown around that, you know, Arkansas have blowing leads late in games or are losing games by just a very slim margin or for whatever reason, a lot of it could have been changed if the kicking game was there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like the kicking game almost gets overshadowed because offense and defense, let's be honest, those are where most of the games are won or lost, is by the offense or by the defense. But at the same time, though, having a solid special teams unit can also be a difference maker as well. If you just think back to 2011, and I know that 2011 was kind of the gold standard when it comes to a Razorback football team, but as great as Tyler Wilson and all those guys were, and as great and as solid as the defense was on that side of the ball too, one of the things that you could always count on is you had Zach Hawker as your field goal kicker. You had Joe Adams as a punt returner. You had Dennis Johnson as your kick returner. You had Dylan Breeding as your punter. And all four of those guys were able to make big electric plays in their own respects. In a lot of cases, those were the types of games that you had from those guys that could change momentum in a split second. And since that point, Arkansas has never really had, for certain, no special teams returners that have been able to be that explosive. Besides Corliss Marshall, but he wasn't on the team after a few games. Mm-hmm. But the kicking game hasn't really been there since. Now, punting, I know Toby Baker was really good. He had some decent punters there. But it's just sometimes do we overlook special teams as far as the importance of them and as far as the impact that they can have? Because
now, while you're going through that, I've just Googled odds of scoring a touchdown following a touchback. And there's this chart that pulled up. I have, and it's on, how credible is Reddit? Is this like Wikipedia?
On Reddit? Yeah. Reddit's really credible.
I don't know. It's the only thing you pulled up. But it says here, there's a chart by yard line of how likely you are to score based on where you start your possession. And it says if you start at the 25-yard line, it's 4.2%. That sounds low. Sounds really low.
Yeah, that sounds way too low.
I was just looking to see there, you know, what some advanced metrics would be. I'd be interested in seeing something that was, like, credibly studied. And, okay, if you start at the 20, your odds of taking that drive to the house are this percent, 25, you know, because you know the further out you get, the likelihood of scoring a touchdown goes way up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just common sense. I'd love to see some kind of advanced, and you know some of these gurus out here, these Sabanites.
Yeah, sports science types.
They've got that information. They know. So they also know that, hey, we got a good enough coverage team. If we can hang that kick off the air, force them to take it at the 5, and we can tackle them inside the 20, we shut 8% down their likelihood to score. They've got it figured out. This is not a guess on why some of these teams do what they do. I just know that you eliminate the odds of a return. When Arkansas has always seemed to struggle with special teams, when you don't give the opponent a chance to take it anywhere. So I'd be really interested in seeing someone that's really studied that. And I know it's out there somewhere. We just don't have access to it.
Yeah, because with what the rules have changed, because, you know, before it was always a touchback. It was at the 20. Now it's at the 25. Right. And they moved the kickoff placement up five yards. I mean, there's been some movement.
Well, they changed it to where you can fair catch inside.
Yeah, that's right, too.
And then you get the fair catch.
At the 25.
You get the touchback.
Yeah, at the 25. So the way that the rules have changed, and to really protect the returners and to try to eliminate, essentially, any type of kickoff, because I guess through their studies, the play that got the most injuries in college football or in football in general has always been kickoffs.
Well, I mean, according to their studies. You got two opponents moving at high rates of speed. And, I mean, the worst injuries happen on kickoff returns.
Yeah.
On kicking plays.
Because you have...
I know this. That I can still... You know, I didn't play... I got into this crazy radio business while I was in high school. So I did not play high school football, but I played through junior high. And the hardest hits, the worst part of practice was having to do full-scale, full-speed kickoff return.
Yeah.
And busting the wedge. I mean, so it's true at every level. Why they've made rules since like 30 years ago that, hey, you can't go in there and crack helmets. And I know I've seen it as an official when the rules did not prevent those these guys that were wedge busters and come down and helmet to helmet contact at full speed is dangerous.
Yeah.
It hurts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what they're trying to do is eliminate those type of plays right out of the game by just, hey, the more fair catches, the more we just shut down the return altogether with a drive that we're just going to award you at the 25. And that was the incentive. Hey, take the touchback, take the fair catch, we'll just give you the ball at the 20, give you a free 5 yards for doing it. That was the incentive.
And that's why I feel like there should be no reason why, since those rules are being put in place and they're trying to eliminate that, then just go ahead and have it eliminated from if you're a kickoff team, is what I'm saying. So, like,
what do you do about onside kicks at the end of the game when you're trying to get the ball back?
I'm not saying the rule committee needs to come in. I'm saying as a football team, when you're out there and you knowing that the rules are set up to where that ball's going to be at the 25, but don't worry about trying to do anything else, but just get it to the 25.
I agree. But there are also proponents of, let's just take kickoffs out of the game altogether.
I'm not for that because, like I said, onside kicks and it's just been so integral and part of the game. I don't know what
You would never have a surprise onside kick again in the game.
Yeah, never. I mean, it eliminates that entirely. So
you could still say, well, you can kick off, but you can only onside kick. We're not going to have any deep kickoffs anymore. It's still one of the most exciting plays in football at any level. Whether you're at a high school game or you're watching the NFL on Sunday, when someone takes it like 106 yards out of the end zone to the house, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah. I mean, it is either a momentum builder or a momentum killer.
It can change everything in a football game.
Yeah. I mean, it could be the difference. And that's why I'm saying that you can't eliminate it altogether. But I do believe that if you are a team,
there are people that believe you should.
And you understand that those are the rules that are put in place to where it hasn't fully been eliminated, but they're trying to limit it. Then just go ahead and kick it out of the end zone. Go ahead and make that into position to where you don't have to worry about it anymore. Because, again, maybe this is just my theory behind it or my feelings behind it, my philosophy. His coaches are different. But like you said, Tommy, how many kickoff return, how many touchbacks have been returned for a touchdown?
Yeah.
Zero. So it's like, you have, to me, if you know that that's in place and you know that you can guarantee that, and you can guarantee that they're going to start at the 25, you can guarantee all these things, then just kick it out of the end zone, or at least get a kicker that can kick it out of the end zone consistently, because look at last year specifically and how many games or how many times it cost Arkansas, and the fact that they could not, they did not have a kicker that could consistently kick it out of the end zone. It was brutal.
That, but you can blame the kicker, and that's fine, and that's fair. But it still comes down to coverage. You still got to tackle somebody's butt.
But I understand.
And that's still – but it's a twofold thing. You're right, but it's not just the kicker. It's those other 10 guys that need to tackle somebody.
I know. I completely agree. I'm just saying eliminate even the risk of it all.
I'm all in. I've been all in on that for years. I've never seen a touchback return for a touchdown. Kick it out of the end zone. Kick it into the end zone. Kick it so deep they don't even want to try you.
Yeah. Just eliminate that completely. Eliminate that threat.
Now, if you had a great coverage team, if you're Alabama and you can put a bunch of 4-4 guys out there, hang it. Bury it at the 5-yard line in the coffin corner.
But when you got walk-ons out there?
But when you got, well, I mean, but Arkansas just has a depth challenge.
I understand.
They're not able to put, they can't go toe-for-toe with somebody else's return team week in, week out. They haven't over the long haul, at least.
Right.
And, again, just put the ball at the 25 and move on.
Mm-hmm. Because last year, what was it, Texas A&M, the first play of the game, they returned for a touchdown. What, what'd you lose by? 7 points.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a difference in a game.
As you said, it can be as huge a momentum swing in a game. Because you could be down 21 to start the third quarter, start the second half, and you return that opening kickoff for a touchdown, it's
new
like
game.
You scored twice.
Yep. It's a completely
new
game.
The mindsets change. You know, you're starting to bow your chest out a little bit. You're feeling big because, A, you didn't chew up a lot of clock. B, you scored 7 points in a hurry. And now all the energy's on your sideline. It's almost like you scored twice.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Now the other team's hanging their head because it's really an embarrassing way to let someone score on you. But it's one of the least desirable ways to let your opponent get to the end zone is a special teams 100-yard-ish type return. That's just – it's not good.
No. I mean, it was John L. Smith always said their special teams are battles for large chunks of land or
one
whatever
play,
it was.
One play wars for giant chunks of land.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's as crazy as John L. was, that is statement.
I mean, whether it's punting or whether it's kick coverage, kickoff return stuff, they're huge field position swings. And that's one of the first things when we get a box score following the game. I'll look at the drive chart. How many drives did each team have? Usually 12 or 13, 11, 12, 13 is kind of an average day. Where did you start those drives? Those are some of the first stats I look at in any game is the drive charts and starting field positions. And you can generally find why a team won and why a team lost based on starting field positions. Because we go back to, again, that Reddit chart, probably an incredible one, but there's one out there somewhere that is. You score more when you start at the 40? Amazing. You know, you score less when you start at the 20? I didn't know that. You know, it's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about starting field position. That's what the kicking game can give you.
Yeah.
That's why they always say a great punter is, is the defense's best friend, you know?
Because in punting. Because
it's about field position.
Yeah,
it's about making them go 85, or it's about making them go 90, or whatever it is, you know?
And how often do you see punt returns anymore? I mean, it's just almost non-existent.
Because if you've got a good punter that can hang it. There's a reason they're looking for 4-3, 4-4 guys.
Yeah.
And they're looking for punters that can hang it in the air 4-5, 4-6, 4-7. Why? Because it's simple math.
Yep, exactly. So
faster than the kick.
Yeah, so the whole point is that the special teams, you know, when it comes to returns and kickoffs and all that, it's just not as much a part of the game as it once was.
Yep.
But you still got to be able to play it. You still got to be able to have a way to stop it, and you still got to be able to keep it from affecting you negatively because it can switch everything in the blink of an eye. So, that's I don't know. If we talk about special teams, we probably won't talk about them for until they lose a game for Arkansas this upcoming football season. But
so huge when it comes to field position.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
Where does Arkansas rank as a football program in the SEC? It's just as job-wise and program-wise, just where's it ranked?
the football?
Yeah.
Football only. Are we talking all time? Are we talking right now? Just, snapshot?
Just the current program. Say if you're looking for a coach. And you're like, okay, so because like when Arkansas basketball is looking for a coach, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. This is this job ranking in here in the SEC, so you should get this type of coach. Where would you have football?
Probably somewhere, I mean, be in the bottom third, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, Vanderbilt's the worst job.
Yeah.
You can start there and you can work your way up. And then, I mean, obviously, Bama's the best football job in the league, and then you go to Georgia, number two, and would say Georgia's better than the Bama job, but those are one and two.
Yeah. LSU's up there.
LSU, and then you put, I still throw Auburn somewhere in there because of their proximity to Atlanta and the recruiting grounds there, and I would probably put Auburn behind A&M. The A&M's the only SEC school in the state of Texas, and they got a gajillion dollars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now we're, what's that, six right there?
Yeah.
Tennessee's somewhere up in that mix because of their money. We hadn't said Florida yet.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you start getting, okay, now we're down to, and I don't think anyone would argue with any of those schools.
No,
you might argue with order, but all of those schools are ahead of Arkansas. Then the debate begins. Is it Arkansas or South Carolina? Is it Arkansas or Ole Miss? Is it Arkansas or Mississippi State? Right now, here recently, Mississippi State's been the better of all of those programs. Mm-hmm. I would put them ahead of Arkansas and Ole Miss and South Carolina. Then you just keep debating it down. So, you know, Missouri has had Arkansas's number. I think Arkansas is still a better job. I'd still put Missouri, you know, 12th or 13th. So Arkansas is somewhere between 9 and 11 or 12 with me.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm just being objective.
Okay, so let's just go with 9th. Let's go high.
Okay,
let's go with their 9th.
Give them benefit of the doubt.
Basketball, you probably have what, 2nd? 3rd?
Now, that's a different conversation altogether. Kentucky's obviously 1.
Yeah. I personally, I'd have them at 2nd, but maybe that's biased.
I definitely have them in the top 4, probably no worse than 3rd.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right, we'll just go 2nd or 3rd, somewhere in there. All right, but what about baseball?
Boy, there's so many good ones. And it's not that Arkansas isn't great, but
you'd have to say LSU's probably number 1 best baseball job, maybe.
I don't know. I could make the case that Arkansas is the best baseball job.
Which is, yeah. I mean, you can, legitimately.
Because Arkansas has, even though they haven't won the national championship, even though they got very close, and we don't need to talk about how close because we all know how close they got. Arkansas's willingness as an administration and as a school, and not that LSU doesn't or South Carolina or Mississippi State does, but Arkansas's willingness, one of the first things Hunter Yurecek did on the job as AD is, let's get this new clubhouse facility they're getting ready to start building going. I mean, that was like one of the first new projects he wanted to get going. The willingness to fund baseball, the willingness to expand, the willingness to provide more facilities and more funding has never been an issue.
Nope.
And I don't know all the ins and outs with LSU and South Carolina, and I know they're having a rough year this year for whatever reason at South Carolina, but Arkansas seems to embrace, from a fan standpoint, an administration standpoint, baseball about as well as it can be done. So I think you can make the case that Arkansas has got the best baseball job. You got the indoor facility. Yep. You got everything you need right there.
Would you say elite?
And then they keep adding more.
For sure, top 3, though.
Oh, then no question. Okay. I think it's either 1 or 2. LSU.
I agree with you. I just kind of just getting an air of here. And those are the 3 major sports, obviously, in this conference. So then this becomes the question of not having to use these other sports as grading systems. But when it comes to athletic director, when it comes to being head over in athletic departments in the SEC, where does Arkansas rank there? As far as an athletic director job, what job? Where does it rank as a job?
Well, depends on the criteria and how you're looking at it. Is it more difficult to win championships that really matter at Arkansas? Yeah. It just is. I mean, so are you basing it as an AD of, is it about winning championships? Is it about hiring coaches? Is it about raising money and funds and donations and donors? I mean, because those are really the main criteria for an AD. Yep. What's your job? Get the programs in a position to win championships. Hire coaches when needed. Fire and hire coaches as needed. and then raise the money to provide the facilities and the resources needed to support the other two things we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty much the job of an AD, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I just kind of wrote the job description.
That's right.
Where's that easier at? Well, it's easier at Alabama because they mm-hmm. they win a lot in the sport that matters most. We like it or not, mm-hmm. football matters most.
But as a caveat to that, if you're an AD and you have to replace Nick Saban, does that make that the better job? I mean, because when you talk about hiring and firing coaches, yeah, you have Nick Saban there. Of course, it's easy right now.
Right now, yeah.
But when,
you look like a genius.
But once Nick Saban leaves, the amount of pressure to make sure you get the right hire.
Yeah, but even in like Dabo Swinney's making like, what, $9.3 million for the next 10 years. But his one caveat to get out is to go where?
If it's Alabama, it's actually higher of a buyout.
So, I mean, but he can get out.
Yes, yeah. yes, he can.
But, you know, Bama is going to be the most desired football job there's ever been mm-hmm. when Nick Saban retires.
But besides football, though.
Do you think so?
Absolutely.
See, you think people want to follow a legend, what he did? See, I would disagree with that. I think that they're going to have a tough time getting who they want.
I think they'll be lined up for that job.
I don't know, man.
I understand the following the legend part, but the machine is still in place. The system was still, I mean,
well,
the ability at least in the short term to come in and win and get a couple championships or a championship on your resume as a head coach will be there.
I'm never in favor of following a legend. I just think that's one of the most difficult things to do job-wise in any profession is following mm-hmm. someone who's been a staple of whatever that profession is for quite some time. And that this is the best coach in college football mm-hmm. history, not just in our generation. But
you know what? Jeff Long did a hell of a job for 10 years following the biggest legend there's ever been in our state as the AD.
Yeah.
We're talking ADs here, so I'll bring it back to that.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not act like it can't be done.
No, it can't be.
Jay Leno did a pretty good job following Johnny Carson.
Well, and I'd say Urban Meyer did a good job following Jim Tressel up at Ohio State. So it can be done.
It can be done.
It's just more often than not, though, when you see Steve Spurrier leave Florida, Ron Zook comes in, and it's tough. I mean, there's times where it doesn't
If equate. Saban announces his retirement tomorrow, Urban Meyer might be magically healed, you know,
yeah.
ready to go again. I'm energized. I'm healthier than ever. You know?
He may be back in it somehow, some way. But that's the whole question. And when I'm talking about athletic directors, because that's a job that obviously is a very important one. But when it comes to the rest of the SEC, you know, where is it at as far as Arkansas goes?
My brother just texted. This is a great point. It's maybe the best one of the morning right here. Barry Switzer following Jimmy Johnson. And he just stepped into a ready-made situation and got him another ring right there.
Yeah.
You know, so I agree with your point generally. Following a legend is more often than not difficult, but it's not unheard of to go in and And I'm not saying there's going to be another Nick Saban. Don't hear me saying that, well, the next guy's going to come in and win six or seven,
but if they
eight
hire,
more national
But if they hire
titles,
Dabo Swinney.
But it's not going to be a disaster either.
No.
I mean, I'm just saying there are coaches that would jump at the opportunity to step into a ready-made national championship-level program.
But would you not say, though, that if at
– So that's got to be the easiest job as an AD because you've got it ready-made.
Right, but at a place like Alabama, though, if they don't get Dabo Swinney
– Mm-hmm.
It might be considered.
They're going to get it.
But just say if they didn't.
You think so?
For whatever reason. Just,
I don't know. You think it's pretty dead set that he goes there
no,
after?
No, because he's building something in Clemson that's what? Equal
I'm
to
I'm not him. Leaving Clemson if I'm him. I'm not even touching that job.
Well, see, and that's my point, is that say if that happens, where you go? I mean, because you can't get any other coach that'll even come close to that.
If you're Kirby Smart, would you leave Georgia for that?
Nah, he's an alum. He's not leaving there. Jeremy Pruitt is the guy that I think a lot of Alabama people would kind of lean to because he's an alum. But that's
he better go do some.
I know, it's kind of John's point. That's a significant drop off from Dabo Swinney and Kirby Smart.
They're not going with a name like Jeremy Pruitt.
No, but
then who would they go with though? The list shrinks when you leave. I mean. If Urban Meyer doesn't come back to college football, if Dabo Swinney doesn't go back to his alma mater, and then if Kirby Smart doesn't come back to where he coached for so long under Saban, that list is just shrunk significantly.
You go get someone like, and I'm not suggesting this, but you go get like the next Pete Carroll, a guy to go from the NFL, come back to a prime program. You get someone like that, you know, you get a hot NFL name that you're willing to leave the NFL to coach at a place like Bama. So I don't think the AD at Alabama is going to have any problem filling that job with a quality.
No. I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that the amount of pressure it's going to be on him to make sure that he gets a big time hire is going to be as high as ever. And other programs too. And because football is always going to be the king. It's going to be the most important job in at every SEC school besides maybe Kentucky, because basketball is going to be right. The most important. But if you don't make the right hire, or if you're an AD and you don't have the right resources to make the right hire at a place like Alabama or Georgia or LSU or wherever.
Resources aren't a problem.
Right, but exactly. But if you don't do it, it completely destroys it.
Toughest place is probably still Vanderbilt, right? All around AD's
yes.
job.
Yeah. After that, I'd say Missouri.
Because maybe you definitely have the smallest football stadium. You probably have the smallest amount of reserves in cash-wise, financially resource-wise. At Vanderbilt, they're private, so we don't always see all of their numbers financially there. But Vanderbilt's the first is at 14.
Yes, I would say.
And I would say Bama's at 1. And then I'm going to tell you, A&M may be the second best job.
Are you talking about football or just athletic departments in general?
Just total athletic department.
Okay. See, I don't know if I'd have Bama at number 1.
Well,
because
you asked me what I thought. I just told you what I thought. And I think Bama's the best job.
And that's exactly right. I just don't know if I'd have Bama at 1. Because if we're looking at total athletic departments, Alabama may be the biggest in football by far, for sure. But as far as everything else goes, I mean, would you have Florida in there?
The job of the AD is how much money can you raise again?
Right. It's important.
How easy is it to hire coaches to come to your university?
So why wouldn't that make Texas A&M number 1? They have the money.
I think Bama's 1.
Yeah.
And I think A&M is 2.
You got A&M 2? Okay. I mean, like you're not going to be able to say, okay, this is for sure the ranking system, because it's just an opinion. But, you know, I don't know. We have to take a commercial break, though. We'll talk about this. We'll continue
that. Florida's not as high as you think, either.
No. I agree there, too, as far as success. But as a success in it and the programs that are in it, people would disagree. But, again, it's just about how you rank them.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
Go to the phone lines and welcome the man, Scott Tabor, former Razorback pitcher, into the show. Scott, appreciate you joining us.
The man. That's a lot to live up to.
The man, I like that.
That's a lot to live up to.
I don't think you hear that every morning I wake up. I'm going to look at myself in the mirror and say, hello, man, what's up?
It's always, man. Yeah, keep telling yourself that you're the man, Scott, when you're going to come on this show. So, but
I know. Yeah, I always slap in the face when I really feel
it. Well, as always, appreciate you hopping on with us this morning. But, you know, Arkansas is in great shape right now, Scott. They are on a roll in SEC play, going on the road to Lexington against arguably the worst team in the SEC. But as Dave Van Horn says, there's not really a bad team in the SEC, and you always got to take these teams seriously.
Exactly. You take Kentucky out of the SEC and stick them in the MAC or the MEAC or the SEAC or the SWAC or one of the YACs, and they're a stud. They're a good team. They're college Division I baseball players, and they're SEC baseball players. They're not recruited out of Podunk U. You know, they're some good ball players. Should be a great series.
Yeah. Hey, I was listening. I don't know if it's Ben McDonald or one of the analysts on one of these SEC broadcasts, but it was an interesting point about it's not just always like tonight we'll look at Isaiah Campbell and the pitching matchup, and we're going to talk ERAs and records and all these stats. But he was also talking the matchup between pitcher and umpire. And, you know, the interesting thing, because Arkansas got in one of these games a couple of weeks ago where it was like a two-hour beauty. I mean, it was like a two-hour, 20-minute game, and both pitchers were on. And the point was made during that broadcast, Scott, and you being a former professional pitcher, understand that it's not just the pitchers, too. It's the matchup with the umpire who's going to maybe give that outside strike, give that edge of the plate. And, you know, that can be a pitcher's dream or a pitcher's nightmare. Give us some more insight about how it's not just always pitcher on pitcher and pitcher versus their batting lineup, but sometimes who's behind that plate, and just they may be the most consistent guy pitch to pitch, but it's just their tendencies that make a difference for a guy like Isaiah Campbell tonight.
Exactly. As a player, as a pitcher, you want to have an umpire who's consistent. Your first couple of innings, you have to find out where that consistent spot is. I mean, if he consistent, it will give you an inch or two outside. That's where you pitch. Now, a lot of this is on your catcher, because your catcher's right there with him. He's got him right over his shoulder. He's talking to him the whole time. You'll watch them. They chit-chat back and forth. But some umpires will give a low strike right at the knees, which is what you train to throw. You grow up throwing in the bullpen, you're throwing at the knees. You want to stay at the knees. You won't get hurt there. But there are some umpires that bring that strike zone up more into the hitting zone. So now you're a little bit more vulnerable because they're just not going to give it to you. And you have to learn that as a game goes along, if they're not going to give it to you, don't throw it there. You just have to make that adjustment as a pitcher. Some pitchers can do it. Some pitchers can't. There's also the high strike. What used to be a high strike used to be belt high, nothing above the belt. Now, legally, the strike zone is from the letters down. So there are some umpires who use the whole strike zone, and they've been encouraged to do that. So it's an adjustment. It's a game within a game that a lot of people don't see. Back in the 70s, you go down to Texas, they had an umpire named John Bible. And there were no corners. I mean, you worked the middle of the plate. And it was
a coffee can.
Pretty much. Oh, my gosh. And it made for a better game from the fans' point of view because they want to see some hitting. And they had a guy named Spike Owen who had over 100 walks a year. Once you went down there and pitched, you figured out why he had 100 walks a year. He never swung until he had two strikes, and it took a while to find out where the strike zone was down there. So it is a game within a game that a casual fan doesn't really see. And that's, to me, that's more on the catcher than it is on the pitcher because, you know, as a catcher and pitcher, you'll come out after the thing, after the inning, and, you know, you can see pitchers get frustrated sometimes because pitches that are good strike pitches, which are the pitches that you want, and you call it a pitcher's pitch. One that's not going to get hit, and it should be a strike, and they don't call it. Now you got to go back and throw something that could possibly get hit pretty hard.
Speaking with Scott Tabor, former Razorback pitcher, right now on the Morning Rush. Scott, I've always been interested about this because, again, going into this weekend, we know Isaiah Campbell starting tonight. You got Patrick Wicklander starting tomorrow. But, again, TBA on Sunday, everyone's assuming that it's going to be Connor Noland. Does it mean anything when coaches don't put out the name there? Does it mean anything for Connor Noland? And what would be the reasoning why Dave Van Horn, knowing that how well that Connor Noland's been playing, that he's still not for sure saying he's going to be the starter on Sunday?
Well, I think when you're the third guy, you know, I love the fact that he is now sticking Wicklander in there in the number two spot because I think he's earned that and shown that he is much better, much more effective as a starter than he is as a reliever. You know, confidence-wise, it would be nice. It's not so much of a bad thing. It's a great thing if you name your three starters. Here's my three starters, and this is what they're going to be the rest of the season. It wouldn't hurt my feelings at all to see that. I think Connor has earned his way back into the starting rotation on weekends. You know, that 15-pitch outing that he had where he didn't get an out could possibly be the best thing that happened to him. I mean, it's embarrassing as a player, a high-level player, to have an outing like that. And I'm sure he probably got the nickname, you know, 15, hey, you want us to change your number? I'm sure we would have taken his jersey and put 15 on the back of it and hung it in his locker for a while. You know, because those are things that are embarrassing as an athlete, and no athlete likes to be embarrassed. So he's kind of stepped up his game, maybe refocused a little bit, and you see the result of it. He's always had good stuff. Part of the learning curve of being a freshman. But from the coach's side, you know, you don't know how the first two games, you want to win two out of three of every series. If you do that, you're going to be in great shape. So they don't want to just go ahead and throw out there, you know, Connor, you're not going to throw until Sunday. Well, what if something happens, you know, in those first two games where he needs to come in? There's a spot where we need somebody to come in and give us three good innings. Because you don't know what arms are going to feel like. This time of year, arms start breaking down a little bit. Nothing serious. They just get a little tired. You get a little hitch and you're giddy up and things change on the mound. So it's probably written down, you know, Connor's going to start unless. And that's where the TBA comes around.
Let's look at a couple other series. I want to get your thoughts. It's a big weekend in the West. Arkansas, obviously, at Kentucky. We're talking about that. But you also have Ole Miss at LSU. That's a huge matchup with Western Division implications. And also Mississippi State and A&M, I think, is a series we'll all be keeping an eye on this weekend. Give us a couple things you'll be watching, and those two that are critical to Arkansas's chase for a Western Division title.
Boy, I'd love to tell you I sit down and watch all the SEC games all weekend and do all these other things, but I'm a big Arkansas fan. You know, I really only care about what the Razorbacks do. Overall, the Razorbacks have put themselves in a position finally where they're two games up. If they just go through the rest of the season and take care of business, they've got LSU and they've got A&M. So if they go through and just take care of business and win at least two out of three in all these, you know, things are set. Things are set. So they will have won the championship. And I hear a lot of people, you know, yakking about you know, your power ratings and RPI and where you're going to find them. Are we playing for a national seed? You know, these kids aren't playing for a national seed right now. These kids are playing to win the next game. And I think you can kind of see that in their play and in their attitude. They know it. They do that, and they're trained to do that. And Van Horn is very, very, very effective in getting their his kids to play game to game to game, you know, win the pitch, win the inning, win the game. And I think that they have that mentality. And if they know if they do that, the national seed will come, because you can't – sometimes baseball is just a strange sport. You can't, especially this time of year, because like I said, because of arms or hitters finally coming around. I mean, look at Jordan McFarland. Jordan McFarland's hitting 500 in conference. And he's all of a sudden a force to be reckoned with, and then get him back at first base where you have a little bit bigger target over there. A lot of little things happen. I just think it's he's got him playing. Let's go in. Let's try to win two out of three. That's why he's not named the third pitcher. So it's – and you got LSU coming in town next weekend, and then A&M after that. Take care of business, and they'll win the conference, which is what all these kids want to do. Get a ring and go to the conference tournament. It should be interesting.
Now, Scott, I know that it doesn't necessarily matter exactly how Arkansas gets to that point or as far as what they're doing is win streaks and all, but I think it's really impressive that they have a 7-game win streak right now in the SEC that's tied for the third most since joining the conference. And if they were to sweep this weekend against Kentucky, which you never want to put guarantees, but it's possible, then that would tie them for the most wins in a row in SEC play at 10. How difficult is it to do have that type of consistency and that type of success, especially in this conference, to win that many games in a row, especially during this time where the SEC is as strong as it's ever been?
You know, at the beginning of the season, we were all talking about what do we have and the youth of this team and what do we really have going down the stretch and what's going to get put together. And we've gotten to watch all the pieces coming together. And I don't think people realize this is, if you just kind of sit back and step back away from this little period of Arkansas Razorback baseball, this is kind of like basketball in the 90s. We're not really thinking about, well, we need to win three here, and these guys need to sweep, and those guys need to sweep to give us a chance to get into the SEC tournament. And then we can break a run, win the tournament, and get an at-large bid. We're thinking of national seeds right now. So, it's just a great time to be a Razorback fan in baseball. Because of the fact that everything is falling into place. Injuries, the injury bug is staying away, mostly. You know, Goodhart got hurt a little bit last year, dinged his shoulder up last week. I believe he's supposed to be back this weekend. And, I mean, he's tearing it up in conference. And that's what you're really worried about. And, you know, this game against Grambling the other day was a nice little breather, nice little rest, but go down and get some good batting practice, play the game the way it's supposed to be played, and just bury the guys, which you're supposed to. So it's a fun time to be watching this all come about, and all the pieces are there. And we talked about it at the beginning of the season. All the pieces were there for a run for the national championship because of their depth, and I think because of their youth. It's kind of that no brains, no headaches. You know, let's just go play baseball, and they're doing that. They're being put in position to be successful, and figuring out the pitching staff is always the biggest puzzle, because you've got a lot of young arms, but there are a lot of young, really, really, really good arms. You got the anchor in Campbell, and he's only a junior, you know, so it's not like we have a team full of seniors playing. It's a team full of kids.
Well, they certainly got it going on, and we'll see how it plays out this weekend against Kentucky and Lexington. Scott Tabor, former Razorback pitcher, always appreciate you hopping on with us, Scott. Have a great weekend, man. We'll catch up with you next Friday, all right?
All right. Appreciate it. Go Hogs.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.